morning and welcome to New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. I'm Stephen Spitz. On today's show, homicides are soaring, but is crime really out of control in Albuquerque? We'll ask our new police chief, Harold Medina. Harold Medina, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Stephen, for having me here today.
Well, it's great to have you, and what I'd like to do is focus our conversation on three policing issues. First, the increase in homicides. Two, APD's noncompliance, according to the Independent Monitor, with the consent decree which governs APD. And then third, finally, the impact of the George Floyd protests. And just when I was like reviewing all this to figure out how to do the show, it occurred to me that these are some really tough issues, and that probably makes it a very tough time to take over APD. And so I really wanted to start with that. Do you agree that it's a particularly tough time to take on running this force? And what do you really expect to be able to accomplish?
You know, it is a very difficult time, not only in Albuquerque, but across the nation for major cities. I'm involved in Major City Chiefs, which is an organization that unites the biggest law enforcement agencies in the United States. And, you know, strikingly, in 2020 till now, approximately, I believe they said 40 cities have changed chiefs. It's a difficult time in policing nationwide. It's a difficult time in Albuquerque. And there are several obstacles we're seeing right now. And you named two of them right off the back. You know, every city, for the most part, major city, has seen a sharp increase in violent crime across the nation.
In terms of the amount of the increase in Albuquerque, I mean, you can calculate it various ways, but the way I calculate it, it's about a 50% increase. So that if current homicide levels continue, we'll be about 120, and in prior years it was around 80. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think it's close. I think actually you're being very kind to us. I think it could end up being just slightly above that, in the 130 range. But it's really difficult, and we are seeing better trend patterns. We don't know if they'll last, but I kind of look at it as number of days between homicides. And recently, it seems like it's increasing to, you know, 5-6 days, and that would put us in a much better situation going through the second part of the year. But we'll have to see if they stand up and if it's just not a slow time. And that's why we're seeing a little bit more space between homicides.
So what I saw was a press release from attributed to you that said, well, it's drug deals, it's domestic violence and guns. And I'm sure that explains it. But that was also true in 2020. And there wasn't an increase in homicides in 2020.
I think we have to look that in 2020, in a way, you know, and it's horrible terminology to use, but in a way, in 2020, we dodged the bullet. If you looked across the nation, the major city chiefs, which are the only fair comparison for Albuquerque, a lot of times people try to compare us within the state. There is no other city that's equal or close to what Albuquerque is. So when you compare us to the major cities across the nation, in 2020, we were very fortunate. We got through 2020 as one of only two or three agencies that actually had a homicide decrease. You know, we were hoping we'd be able to carry that into 2021.
But it was very slight, right? It was like three people.
Very, very slight. And we were hoping we'd be able to carry that trend through the year. But as we know, we're going through a pandemic, and I think that there'll be years upon years of research that is conducted as to why exactly we had such a sharp increase in violence in 2021 in the major cities. And
so, go ahead. The thing about 2020 that I think that makes it so interesting is that some of the theories that have been floated for why the homicides are increasing are really belied by what happened in 2020. Because I've seen these two theories that basically they assume that the police are backing off policing, and that's why homicides are going up. And they say they're backing off either because of scrutiny under the consent decree or scrutiny because of the George Floyd, you know, in the wake of George Floyd. But the thing is, that was also going on in 2020, and homicides didn't go up in 2020. So that really seems a negative, those explanations to me.
You know, and I think that that's why I think there's going to be a lot of studies based around this. And I always think it's really difficult for us to say this one thing caused it. Because honestly, if it was that simple, well, we'd just go address that one thing. I think in reality, it's a totality of a lot of different things that meet at a certain point that set the direction and the trends that are going to be occurring. The reason I say that is if you think back to 2014 and Albuquerque, you know, we were sitting really good. 2010-11, I was in charge of property crimes. You know, we had some of the lowest property crime rates in 20 years. You know, around 2014, a series of events happened that changed the Albuquerque Police Department forever. And in that, I mean, number one, we had findings come back against us from the Department of Justice, and that started the settlement agreement process. But number two, what a lot of people don't realize is we had a change in the retirement system. And in 2014 is when I first retired. And I retired because if I didn't retire in 2014, I would be waiting 7 years before I got a cost of living increase. Just the change in the retirement system caused a lot of officers to leave. Then you have all the fear of the settlement agreement that officers were facing. And you start to see periods of time where we have officers leaving the department in larger numbers. And when I came back in 2017, we had lost the whole property crimes division. There it was no longer a division. So when you think about those two things and then start adding in other things external to the police department, we went through a bail process where they eliminated bail. Then we went through a case management order where they limited timelines and detention was limited for individuals to stay in custody pending trial. So when you combine all
those things.
I mean, those
are all
things,
constitutional requirements, right? Bail was never existed in order to try to keep people in jail who didn't have money. The whole point of bail was to make sure someone showed up for trial.
And if you think the argument isn't, is it constitutional? It's that the process has changed.
Okay.
And when the process has changed and we had changes in the system, all of a sudden by 2017, we were at a new record high.
Yeah, I mean, crime. I noticed this in terms of, I mean, crime, overall crime just shot up, as you're saying, in 2014. And violent crime also rose. I mean, Albuquerque's always been above the national average in terms of crime, right? In general, it was about two times the national average until 2014, as you say. And then it shot up to about three times the national average. And you're saying you're giving some of the reasons.
Yes. So that happened in 2014. So fast forward to 2020. You know, if you think about it, 18, 19, even part of 20, we did really well. And we're still doing really well in property crimes. Like our property crime rates have dropped. We've had three consecutive years of reductions. This year, it looks like we're going to have a fourth year of reduction. But our homicides and our shootings overshadow everything.
Reduction in property crimes, I mean, that really, again, belies the whole idea the police are backing off or the police aren't policing because, you know, you would see it with regard to all crime and property crimes, would you not, if police are really backing off?
Absolutely. And I tell you, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's this narrative that our officers aren't doing work. And it just drives me crazy because I see how hard the officers work every day. Every day they're arresting individuals and taking them into custody. So I can't attribute this to officers not policing. I think it's much bigger than a police department, why we're in a violent crimes epidemic across the nation. And I think so much of it has to do with exactly why we had protests last year. You know, a lot of the protests, the general theme was equality. And I think when we are able to create a safe, and I use this term quite frequently, healthy community, we will then see reductions in crime.
I want to pick up with you about homicides in particular and how and what we do about them. But let me mention first that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Idea. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very happy to be talking with our new police chief, Harold Medina. And Chief Medina, it seems like of all the crimes that are hard to stop, homicides would have to be number one because because it seems like most of the time a homicide, there are people who know each other, there's some kind of dispute, and it leads to a fatality. But I don't know how, it seems very hard for me to understand how are the police are supposed to stop that.
I think there are ways. I think our violence interruption program can help us in some circumstances reduce violent crime. You know, a lot of times violent crime is retaliatory. You have one group or gang that's in a feud with another, and you have one shooting that you know is going to escalate to a retaliatory shooting. And our violence interruption program was designed to go out and intervene in that cycle of violence and give options and awareness to those that are engaged in
So is this a
this type of
large,
activity.
I mean, from what I've seen, it's not scaled up, the violence interruption program, but is it?
Yeah, it is actually a big focus of the department, and we do have resources. Of course, it still needs more resources.
What I've seen, successful programs like in Chicago and Philadelphia, they actually use not small nonprofits that actually are in the community. And that know sort of what the disputes are that are going on in the community. And as you say, they use people who'd been part of those disputes. But I'm not exactly sure, is that, are we doing that or where are we working with nonprofits to interrupt violence or how's it working?
They're working with a lot of different groups that the city is. And that's where, if you go back, I was talking about how we're working to build up the base of social type programs that we could refer people to. Because in the end, what our social side of our interrupters are, like Angel, is they're that person that's going to connect people to the resources that they need. And we have to continue to build up that resource base within the community, whether it be through nonprofits or other government-funded programs, to we make sure that we could always get somebody the resources they need. Just yesterday, we did, for example, a town hall on fentanyl. And the number one complaint from individuals working with people who have drug addiction problems is the lack of resources and the fact that when somebody wants help, we need to be able to get them to help. But unfortunately, sometimes it's taking 2, 3 months for a bed or space to open up in a program so that they could join. So it's not just private entities we're trying to work with. We're trying to bring everybody together to see where we could combine resources and make sure we have them available for individuals when they need them.
So speaking of resources, it seems like one of the things that you're trying to achieve but have not yet achieved is the full-size police force that the study said should be, I think, 1,200 police, and I think now you're at around 1,000. Is that right?
Yes, we're right around 1,000.
And you're trying to get to 1,200, right?
We're trying to get to 1,200. We actually did hit 1,000 for a brief period of time earlier in the year. We've had about 50 separations. We're somewhere around 950, but we have 50 in the academy. They're going to graduate somewhere around mid-September, so they will fill us back up and hopefully get us close to the 1,000 again. And then we have two classes planned for the fall and winter.
So without a full complement, it kind of makes it difficult. For example, I read about this the Montgomery corridor, if you want to use a football analogy, flood the zone. You took a lot of police, you invested them in this specific area with the idea of dampening down crime. But that was only 2 months, and it was only for part of the city, and then you had to stop. And that's because you really don't have enough people to do it all over the city, in the way you'd like to do it, right?
Yes, you know that I think that's a prime example. You know, the area of Carlisle to Jefferson on Montgomery, the first few months of 2021, those apartment complexes, we had like six homicides in a short period of time. We took a bunch of combined resources. We placed them there in the area for 60 days. And for the one thing we did different than the past is we weren't there to give tickets to everybody who ran a stop sign. We were there to relationship build and gain support and give people tools on how they could protect themselves. We met with all the apartment complexes. We gave crime prevention material. We listened to their concerns. They pointed us in the direction of possible individuals that we should be aware of. And at the end of the 60 days, you know, we packed up and we had to move to another area. But we've since then, we've not had a homicide. So like we drastically changed that area, but we just don't have the resources. And in coincidentally, that's one of our six areas that we want to focus on. If we could have that year-round effort in the six areas we want to focus on, we'd see a reduction in crime. And I think that's why it's so key that we're able to recruit, grow to 1,200, and see if we have enough people to permanently assign to specific areas with the intent of creating a healthy community.
So I read somewhere that for the Northwest Quadrant, for at least part of the year, for the graveyard shift, there were only four officers assigned to that quadrant, which seems like a very small number for a very busy quadrant.
You know, and I don't know if those are the exact numbers and if they're correct, because sometimes they say there's only four people working because some people were off or out in training. But without a doubt, we don't have enough officers assigned to the various parts of the city like we'd like to.
So if we go back to where we started, like, yes, homicides are increasing, but would you say the crime is out of control, or do you feel like it is under control? And if so, why?
Obviously, crime is way too high still.
Yeah,
I think that it is something that we're not going to fix overnight and we're not going to fix together. And, you know, the mayor just put together a bunch of stakeholders and we're working for system solutions for the city because APD could arrest people every day. I think last week we arrested 70 people in our anti-crime operation. We're at 2,000 since we started these last year, almost a year ago. We arrest people every day. But my concern is we know that they can't stay in jail because they don't have money for a bond. A lot of people are out on bond, but they reoffend while we're there. And I think there's a better way for us to do business. I really would like to see where the courts are able to put somebody, because the vast majority of individuals we're dealing with has either drug addiction, mental health addiction. They're going to reoffend because they have no choices. It's their state of mind. So I'd like to get to the point where the courts are able to put somebody into some kind of program to assist them while they're pending
trial. But the problem is the one you already identified, right? The programs don't exist. Because
they
when
don't
you
exist.
Try to find people to, you know, when you try to find a program for people, you can't find it either, right?
Exactly. It's a vicious circle. So until we have those programs and they could get people help as they're awaiting trial, and we could in a more quickly fashion, also those that don't comply and end up going back to jail, we need to move those cases through the system faster for accountability. So I think it's a two-pronged approach. Let's help those that are ready for help, because anybody who understands drug addiction knows a person has to be ready. And those that aren't ready, we have to protect the public and we have to keep them in custody. And hopefully they'll get the help while they're incarcerated. And also, hopefully, we can keep them incarcerated till they have gotten the help they needed so that we're not chasing them weekly in the community and they don't continue to victimize Albuquerque. And we, without a doubt, we also have to draw a solid line in the sand. There are some people that are violent and they've been given many chances. And at a certain point, we have to be tough as a community and we have to understand we can't help everybody. Not everybody's willing to change. And there are some people that unfortunately the best place for them and for the entire community is if they sit in jail.
Well, I want to ask you next about the consent decree, but let me first mention that this is New Mexico People, Places, and Ideas. My name is Stephen Spitz, and I'm very pleased to be joined by our new police chief, Harold Medina. And Chief Medina, the consent decree, I think it's important, you sort of prefaced this, but it's important to remember earlier in the show, But it's important to remember why we have the consent decree, and that was really because of the excessive use of force, really fatalities, police shooting people and those people dying, culminating in the James Boyd shooting in the Sandias. And it was that really, I think, caused the then mayor, Mayor Berry, to invite the Department of Justice in, and that really was, that's what caused the consent decree. But the thing is that we're still having a lot of fatalities in the by police in the metro area. So, like, for example, from 2010 to 2015, there were 40 people shot and 27 died. From 2015 on, there were 44 people shot and 42 died. And that made the Albuquerque metro area the second highest fatality area for police shootings in the United States. Now, I realize that those are not all APD shootings, but the point is that the consent decree isn't just, dotting an I or crossing a T on a police report. It's a lot more than that. True?
Yes, absolutely. I think the consent decree, number one, I want to be on record to say that the Department of Justice is here for a reason. We had to change the way we do business as a department. We had to advance, and they've assisted us in getting moving forward quite a bit. And I think that ultimately, we have to continue to work hard to meet all the requirements to ensure that we're in compliance with this court order. I also want the public to remember that there are so many individuals who feel like the chief or the mayor could tell everybody that we're not going to follow this settlement agreement anymore. That's so far from the truth. We're mandated by a federal judge to follow and to continue to
Yeah,
try to
a
improve.
consent decree is an agreement between two parties. Here, the Department of Justice and the city, and it's an injunction that's issued by a court. And if it's up to the court to let the city go, and it's actually up to the independent monitor to tell the court when to let the city go, right?
Exactly.
So the but the problem is, I mean, the independent monitor has been there for 6 years. And he's been paid $10 million, and supposedly the total cost of all this is $26 million. And I looked at the last report, and he says APD is going backwards.
You know, I think this is something we're prepared for. I think Mayor Keller made a strong statement last fall when he changed leadership at the police department. I've said this over and over in the media, is we're a large ship and we just can't turn on a dime. We've put a lot of things in play. We've put a lot of processes moving forward to address some of those issues. The previous two reports were not great. A lot of it had to do with the lack of accountability. I think that's one of the reasons why the leadership at the police department, the chief, was replaced. And we've taken great strides, and there is a lot of accountability. I think our union is very vocal about the amount of discipline that has been implemented at the police department.
Yeah, they seem to be really chafing under the. I don't know how it's true for the rank and file, but certainly Sean Willoughby, who's the spokesman for the police union, is constantly complaining about the consent decree.
Yeah, you know, and there's a lot of his members that are catching discipline. Was it a perfect system? No. You know, we recently recognized that there are some places we could improve the discipline process, where we had to make sure that when something became progressive, that it was progressive for the right reasons. It was just any violation put you into progressive discipline, which wasn't the right thing, but it's an issue that was occurring since 2016. When I came in 17, I heard them tell the chief and the administration at the time, you need to change this because it's going to cause you problems down the road. Well, that was one of the first things when I became interim chief that I asked to change. And this week, we were able to finally get approval by working with the Department of Justice, working with the monitoring team to revamp our discipline process so that it's not overly harsh in terms of progressive
But
discipline.
the monitor is not saying that you're overly harsh. He's saying that the APD goes out of its way not to discipline officers for violations and not to discipline supervisors who don't say anything when they see a violation. That's what is in the last monitor report.
You know, and I think that one thing we have to remember is there's a big gap between a monitor's report and actual stuff that's occurring within the police
department.
Yeah,
there's a big time difference, right?
There's a big time difference. So you're talking about something that was occurring 6 months ago,
yes,
7 months ago, up to a year ago, because it's over two reporting periods that that comment was made. And I'm talking about where we're at now is that we recognize that part of the problem was that, think about it this way, commanders would take a case into consideration and say, wow, we're giving this officer 20 hours for it. The policy says it should be 20, but man, this is really a 10-hour suspension. So they would give the 10 hours. DOJ is saying, or the monitor is saying, you're reducing discipline. We have the policy that we have to fix because it's mandating that 20. They're saying we're not following policy. And now we recognize and say, look, that policy needed to be fixed. So the discipline and the accountability will be there, but it's more in line with best practices across the nation and what other agencies do. So I hope you can see there how you could actually be doing two things at once. You could be being perceived as not holding individuals accountable because you're not following your policy, but because your policy is broken, you're over-disciplining individuals, and the recommendations coming out are harsher than they need to be.
So we're right near the end of the show, and so I'd like to sort of end with this. You know, $10 million to the monitor, $26 million total in costs. It's sort of a double whammy, according to the monitor, because we're paying a lot and citizens aren't getting that much. So what's a reasonable expectation to actually be in compliance and done with the consent decree, where, you know, that the judge is going to say, okay, you're done? What's a good time frame that we could rely on to say when that could be?
You know, Stephen, I can't give you a time frame, but I can tell you that there were unreasonable promises made when this settlement agreement was implemented. I wasn't here. I think that a lot of people felt they'd be here 4 to 5 years. You look across this nation.
Yeah, I remember
Seattle,
seeing that 4 or 5 years.
Seattle, Portland, Oakland, all of them are upwards of 14 years into settlement agreements. So if anybody thinks that this settlement agreement is going to be done with rather quickly, and it's not a time-intense, long, drawn-out process, they haven't looked across the nation how these settlement agreements have rolled out. I think it's far and few that have ever gotten out of one of these settlement agreements in 10 years.
We are going to have to leave it there. I would like to thank today's guest, Albuquerque Police Chief Harold Medina. Thanks also to my producer, Tristan Klum. The executive producer of this show is Lynn Chebecki. My name is Stephen Spitz, and you've been listening to New Mexico, People, Places, and Ideas on KUNM. Podcasts of the show are available wherever you get podcasts. Archives of past shows are at stephenspitz.com. Thanks for listening. See you next time.